Gonna hit it up and put it on hold. Yeah. I need my passport for a meeting. Something that started at 9 o'clock and they just found out about it. And I called the guy to come in and do it, but he's gonna be late. So I'm gonna find him.
Bye.
Bye,
bye. See ya. In camera so that
whatever conductivities that they have laid for investigation, was investigation by their nature. They implicate and they can easily compromise the end product. In most instances, it's better off that work in progress in those investigations is not reported in public, so that there is a level of comfort from the part of those that are reporting and the engagement thereof. I present to members here that we agree that we go into camera at that time when investigations are going to be reported by the Minister and the DG. And the procedure pursuant to that shall be that we shall engage with a population report and also the first briefing, and then go into a break for tea, and when we come back we go on camera if that is accepted. And also inform that we have to have a quorum when such exercise is followed. Members and Taylor? Hannah? Peter's not coming? We certainly do form a quorum. There is seven of us out of a committee of 15 members. Are we in principle in agreement? Can we take a MOPA and the Stefano? Can we speak to the mic if you don't mind?
Sorry, yeah, I'll move that we do that to
the any Stefano? Thank you. With the due apologies to members of the public and the media, at that time, we shall indeed ask ourselves to be literally struck out of the room. And I guess this camera also will be accordingly advised to be switched off at that time. And again, this is a matter of that we as the committee take it so serious. Any investigations that are taking place, they be given such prominence and importance. But as of now, welcome Minister and welcome DG and the compliments from the department. We're just taking a motion here that seeks to excuse members of the public and media in particular from taking any proceedings out of our own session when we arrive at the point where we have the investigation being tabled by itself. For now, we will only go through a process where we have that report on the processes of the original review and also the flood briefing, and then we'll take a break and then we'll come back for the investigation report. Okay, without waste of time, members, Minister, the floor is yours to take us through the processes that are ongoing in the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members. I don't have to withstand my hand over to the DG.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Sorry, PD. I do not welcome all of us back to Parliament mode for 2011. I guess this becomes our very first meeting that we meet with the Department and also the Minister. We start the year. All are welcome, also from the public and the media. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We took a decision, the department, under the guidance of the minister, that we would want to come and brief the portfolio committee on the process of an official transformation that is taking place in the department. Honourable members will recall that DAF is an amalgamation of three departments. And because of this, we have had to reintegrate people to evaluate new positions, etc. There are consequences of it. And it says that much as well that we have been working on this process for the better part of last year, we are reaching stages that if we are to go forward, it is important that we touch this concerned with our key stakeholders, amongst them the leader of government business. The stage that the old person is reaching is a challenging stage, and we would want all of those who are seen in the governance of Kakala to be on the same stage. On that, we asked Chairperson for a meeting. We wanted the meeting then to be convened over a weekend because the process of unfolding for quite a long time, I think that one of the most appropriate and comfortable with how all the process has been unfolding. So we felt that we wanted to start this year on the same page, moving, having allocated people to the new responsibilities, having done all the necessary processes that are necessary to move to everyone. But the timing was not meant to be the best timing, and therefore, Jefferson advised us that. The only agent possible to us to have this meeting was the duty. So that is the context of the meeting. And we have asked an independent company to involve a specific organizational reconfiguration for us so that an independent body would have not known the people involved in this could objectively look at the process and guide, assist us to find a working. So they are here today, led by Michelle and Sami. And without any further ado, I will invite her to talk about the background, to brief us on where the process is at. Thank you very much. I hand over to Michelle.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members. As the DJ said, my name is Michelle Sami from the Resolve Group. Take you through the organizational structure of all our projects in terms of progress and what's been achieved, and the next steps in the project as well. Just to take you back in terms of background, the reason that the department has embarked on this organizational realignment or review process is because of the merger of the functions of forestry and fisheries into the Department of Agriculture, thereby creating the new Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. With that merger process, it was required that the organizational structure be reviewed and realigned so that the functions could be accommodated into the new organizational structure. In terms of the process that has been followed, an organizational or realignment strategy defining the objectives and the mandate of the entire realignment process was developed by the department. Based on the strategy of the objectives and the mandate, a new organizational design was together. And you would have seen the outcome of that design process where a high-level functional structure was presented to the committee a few months back. Post the sign off of the high-level functional structure, the department went into the process of defining role profiles for every post in the new organizational structure, and thereafter went into a job evaluation process in order to evaluate the various posts on the new organizational structure. once that process has been signed off, approved by the Social Minister and the DG, we went into the process of defining how we move existing employees from the old organizational structure of agriculture, forestry and fisheries into the new organizational structure of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. In so doing, we developed what we call a placement approach and strategy. And we're now in the mode of implementation of that placement process that has now been approved. Once that has been signed off and finalized, we will have the new look for the new organization for the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Just to take you in terms of what you have in front of you, you will have this presentation in front of you, as well as another document defined as the placement strategy for levels 15 to 13, and that is a Word document, and that is in fact the detailed placement approach and strategy that has been implemented by the department. So it defines the approach, the process, and the principles for placement, which I will take you through as well. We thought it would be useful to take you through the high-level organization.
Sorry, Chairperson, on the previous page, what is it, SOE?
We'll start there, it's a state-owned entity, but we will start there. We thought it would be useful to just to come back and show you the approved organogram. And that's the organogram that's now been approved post the job profiling exercise, post the job evaluation exercise, the concurrence by DPSA, as well as the approval by the minister. So in terms of the executive structure, we have the minister and the deputy minister, and then in terms of reporting lines, we have state-owned entities, which are the SOEs, which report into the minister, as well as, and then we've got the director general from the administrative sector. If we now look at the administration itself, you've got the director general, who is supported by 9 branches, which are the 9 deputy director generals, which is corporate services, the chief financial office, stakeholder relations, communication and legal services, policy planning, monitoring and evaluation, economic development, trade and marketing, food security and agrarian reform, agriculture production, health and food safety, forestry and natural resources management, and then fisheries management. So those are the 9 branches of the department. If we go into the actual macro organizational structure now, in terms of the Office of the Director General, you've got the director general, and that's the chief director report, which you've got the chief director executive support, which plans the role only for the chief operations officer in the department. Then you've got the director, the chief officer support, director internal audit, risk management and investigations, project liaison services, and then the transformation unit, which is a sub-director and not a director in terms of the department structure. Just in terms of the color coding, I apologize, it isn't a key. In terms of the green posts, we're just indicating that those are new posts on the organogram. They never existed previously in the old organization. And in terms of the dotted lines, you see some of those posts, the dotted lines are the vacant posts in the organization as it stands at this point in time. If we go into the branches of corporate services is headed by a deputy director general. And then you've got the various chief directors. You've got chief directors, human resources management and development, chief directors of the chief information office, and chief directors, fisheries operations support. And security services is not a chief director, it's a director that reports into the DDG as well. Okay. In terms of chief financial office, it's headed by the DDG, chief financial officer. There are 3 chief directors, chief director financial management, chief director development finance, and chief director financial management sitting at the fisheries level. And they are supported by various directors, including budget and reporting, facilities management, supply chain management, and financial administration. The next branch is stakeholder relations, communication and legal services, supported headed by the deputy director general there, and with 3 chief directors in place are chief directors legal services, which is a new post in the organizational structure. You've got a chief director stakeholder relations and communications, and then a chief director fisheries partnerships management, which would handle all the partnerships and stakeholder engagement issues within the fisheries branch. in terms of grant policy planning, monitoring and evaluation, created by Deputy Director General and then supported by two Chief Directors, Chief Director Monitoring and Evaluation and then Chief Director Planning, Policy Coordination and Analysis. And each of those branches largely handles organizational performance, planning, monitoring, evaluation and strategic plan overall for the department as a whole. The next branch is Economic Development, Trade and Marketing, headed by the Deputy Director General there and supported by three Chief Directors, Chief Directors International Relations and Trade, and then Chief Directors Offices and Rural Enterprise Development, and Chief Directors Agro Processing and Marketing. And you'll see that there's one new post in that branch. The next branch is Food Security and Agrarian Reform, headed by DDG, and there's three Chief Directors, Chief Director Food Security, Chief Director Sector Capacity Development, and then Chief Director National Extension Support Services, and that entire Chief Director is a new addition to the department structure. We've got the branch of Agricultural Production, Health and Food Safety, and we've got Chief Directors reporting into that CDG, Chief Directors Inspection and Quality Team Services, which is vacant. We've got the Chief Director Plant Production and Health, and Chief Director Animal Production and Health. Essentially, this has brought together the all aspects relating to animal and plant production. So there's more focus in terms of that going forward. In terms of the forestry and natural resources management, this has been a merger of the forestry function as well as the natural resource management function. So you're looking at forestry operations, forestry development and regulations, and then natural resources management. This is where you would see issues around natural resource management, climate change, disaster management, and then in private departments consolidated into one branch. The last branch in the department is fisheries management that has now been merged into the department. We've got the Deputy Director General post there that is vacant at the moment and is supported by four Chief Directors. Chief Director Aquaculture and Economic Development, which is a new position in the structure. We've got Chief Director Monitoring, Control and Surveillance, Chief Director Marine Resources Management, and Chief Director Fisheries Research and Development. So in terms of the organizational structure, that is the approved organogram per branch, and it's against this organizational structure that the placement process is going to run. If we take you through the placement process itself, just so that in terms of terminology, placement going forward in terms of the way we define it is the process of repositioning of employees from one post or position in the old organizational structure into a post in the new organizational structure. The principle under which this entire process underpins is that staff will follow the function level post within the old structure into the new organizational structure. And just to clarify in terms of terms, all that means is if I was an employee that was employed in the human resources function in the old structure, if that function follows into the new structure, staff associated with that function would follow across into the new organizational structure. Where the placement framework and approach was designed, we looked at the mandate, the strategy of the department, as well as the regulatory framework within which the department operates. To ensure that the approach and the process that has been put into place meets the legal requirements within which the department operates. So in defining that approach, we have looked at the following pieces of legislation, the Public Service Act, the regulations, the Labor Relations Act, the Senior Management Service Handbook, Resolution 4 of 1998, which is specific to the Department of Agriculture, and the DPSA's Guide on Transformation and Restructuring. In terms of the principles and the objectives of the placement process itself, if we start at 12 o'clock, one of the key principles of this entire process is that the process is fair and transparent. And in implementing this First of all, we ensure that there has been ongoing and regular engagement with stakeholders in the department, including organized labor and employees at all levels of the organization. We design the process in a way to ensure that there is uninterrupted and orderly service delivery. There is an understanding and acknowledgement that there are service delivery imperatives that have to be met while the process continues, and that is why we will see that there will be two structures running in parallel to ensure that those service delivery obligations are met. One of the key other principles that through this entire placement process, the placement of existing employees will be prioritized. The Minister has given an employment security guarantee as part of this process, which means that there will be no dismissals on the grounds of operational requirements as part of this process, not being contemplated in the process at all. The suitably qualified employees will be placed into positions. Ultimately, you want to ensure that employees are suitably qualified or may become suitably qualified within a reasonable period of time to perform the requirements of any position in the organizational structure. The acting and seconded positions have been treated as vacant positions in the organizational structure. So employees that have been acting or have been seconded to a post, that post has been identified as vacant, and we'll go through a competitive placement process and we'll take you through what that means from a procedural perspective. The placement will not be used as a mechanism for promotion. It was crucial that all employees within the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries are placed into the new organizational structure. So we have work together with DPSA to ensure that the regulations are met, and this process in terms of the competitive process will be an internal process only. The post will only be advertised internally. As such, in terms of meeting the requirements of the regulations, there will be no promotion through this process. So it's opened up externally. There's been regular communication with employees, and that has happened at various levels and through various mediums, including presentations, emails, newsletters, etc., that have gone out throughout the entire process. Employment security and skills retention are priorities. The employment security guarantee has been given to all employees. And on top of that, we understand that there are a number of specialists within the department, and the retention of those skills are crucial throughout this entire process. And then lastly, that wage is appropriate to do so, and thermal equity considerations will be taken into account in the placement process itself. So those are the principles upon which the will underpin the entire process as we roll it out. In terms of placement and how do we now roll out the process from a practical perspective, placement is underpinned by the extent of change of a post when comparing the old and new structure. So all that has happened is that they've taken the old organizational structure and the new organizational structure, compared the two on a post-by-post basis to define what is the extent of change of a position. When you're looking at the extent of change of any one position, you've looked at both the output as well as the input of a post. The output defines those deliverables or the objectives of a post, while the input defines the competencies, the knowledge, skills, and behaviors required to deliver successfully against that particular post. In order to define whether a position has changed, we've taken into account both of these aspects of the post and not only the one aspect of the post. Once this initial classification was done, so once there was a comparison of the old and the new organizational structure, the various posts were classified according to those outcomes that you see on slide 24, on that slide there. So the first outcome could be if there's no or there's a minor change to a position, in which instance the incumbent that occupied the position in the old structure would be directly placed into the post in the new organizational structure. All that happens in that instance, the employee receives a letter confirming placement into that particular post in the structure. If, however, after the classification, comparing the output and input of the structure, of that particular post and the outcome was that it was a major change position, that is more than 50% change to a particular post, it means that incumbent has to be placed into the organizational structure by way of a competitive placement process. If the post has been classified as new, vacant, acting or seconded position, again, that post will be filled by way of a competitive placement process. And if there's a no or minor change, but a reduction in the number of posts in the structure, that too will go by way of basis of creation process, all that that entails is that it's a recruitment and selection process, and it will be focused internally within the department only. The positions will be advertised internally. They will be going through applicants will be screened and shortlisted, and then will then be invited to attend a competency-based interview. The outcome of that interview will then determine the placement decision. Where post has been classified as redundant, that employee that occupies that post will be known as an affected employee and will need to therefore apply for post in the organizational structure in order to be accommodated into the new organizational structure. Just to go back in terms of the process itself, we just want to alert you to the fact that after the classification process, there is an acknowledgement that before there has been a merger of the functions and the functions have been moved around in order to be consolidated into various branches, some positions have in fact changed and have changed to a major extent. So more than 40% of the position has in fact changed, which means that there are affected employees currently within the department. All that means is that employees will need to be placed into the organizational structure by contesting for positions. And those posts will be advertised only internally. The only applicants within the department will apply for those posts and will go for interviews in order to be placed against the particular post in the new organizational structure. We've also made a provision for employees that may wish to lodge grievances or objections in the process. Understanding that this is a process that has to be run very tightly in terms of time frame, but understanding that employees do have rights in terms of this process. So a very particular objections process has been designed. Given that the placement decision authority is the Director General, which means that the executing authority of the minister becomes the appeals authority in this matter, all objections will be lodged in writing to the minister, who will consider those objections and make a decision thereon. The minister will be supported by an independent panel, which will be convened to support the minister, will consider the objections, make recommendations for consideration by the minister, who will make the ultimate decision on the objections that are lodged. There have been very specific time frames that have been put into place. So once an employee receives notification, written notification of a placement decision, they have 5 working days within which to lodge an objection. Thereafter, the minister has 7 working days with the need to respond to that objection in writing. Once the response happens and the minister takes a decision, the internal process is complete. The employee then has the right to refer any disputes externally in terms of the various pieces of legislation, so either to the bargaining council or to the labor court. There's been an acknowledgement that there may well be displaced SMS members through this process, but also remembering that there is an employment security guarantee, there will not be retrenchment through this process. In terms of dealing with displaced members through this process, a number of options have been put forward. So a corporate pool has been developed. All that means is that employees will continue doing what they're doing in the interim while they contest for positions in the new organizational structure. There's been a lifespan or maximum lifespan put on that pool for a maximum of 6 months. And after that time, employees must be placed into the organizational structure. Reskilling will take place through a very defined reskilling program, one that identifies where employees need to be upskilled, etc., in order to build into the structure, and those programs will take place in order to ensure that employees are suited to qualify. Redeployment and return serve are an option in terms of other folks in the structure, other departments within the public service, and entities or spheres of government. The voluntary separation package, which is offered by the CPSA, continues to remain on the table, but that is through a different mechanism through the public service framework. And then there is available to those employees who may wish to take it, there is the option of an early retirement package as well, provided that they meet the requirements of the government employee pension fund at that point in time. So in terms of the process and what's been achieved to date, you will see that there's been an entire revision of the strategy and mandate of the department, that the organizational structure was designed, it was submitted to the DPSA for concurrence, that took place earlier this year. once that had happened, went through a earlier last year, in 2010. Once that had happened, the department went through a process of developing job profiles. Those job profiles went through an extensive process together with all employees of the department, particularly at the senior management service level. Those were validated, it went through a job evaluation exercise, and once that had happened, the organigram was finalized and finally signed off by the DG and the minister at the end of December 2010. Once there was a sign up of the organizational structure, we could go into the actual placement rollout process, and that has begun. So there was an initial classification of the post that was undertaken by an independent committee together with some representatives from the department. That classification also took place in December 2010. Once that was signed off, finally the placement panel convened, which is another independent panel which would consider placement decisions and ultimately made recommendations to the Director General for final. The DG chaired that particular panel, and that panel sat on the 5th and the 13th of January of 2011. The placement framework, and that's the one that you had in front of you as well, has gone through a process of consultation with stakeholders, was sent to employees for comment and for feedback, and was also engaged upon through the Department of Bargaining Chamber with Organized Labor. And ultimately, that framework has now been approved, and the version that you've seen is the version that has been amended and finalized following the engagement with the various stakeholders. In terms of the impact of the placement process, that is the first round. At this point in time, there are 45 limited or untrained posts in the organizational structure. And just to clarify, these are not people or heads, they're posts in structure. There are untrained posts, 45 posts. There are 51 trained posts in the organizational structure, 23 new posts, 23 vacant posts, and 2 redundant posts in the organizational structure. If you look at those numbers at the branch level, we've also defined that for you. So per branch, we define how many posts have been changed, unchanged, new, vacant, and redundant. And you'll see that the redundant post is only one in the office of the Director General, and that post is in fact vacant to the old organizational structure, so there isn't an effective incumbent. And there's one post within the agricultural production branch, and that employee will then need to compete for other positions in the organizational structure. Lastly, we've looked at the numbers as well, per level of the organization, at an SMS level. So we looked at that DDG level, chief director, and director level, and you can see the impact of the classification process on a level basis as well. In terms of the next step, as was indicated, it was crucial to present this and consult with a crucial stakeholder, being yourself, before your committee, in order to get feedback and input into the process. Thereafter, the process will be presented to the Department's Oversight Committee. Placement visits will be finalized and distributed. But prior to distribution, there will be one-on-one consultations held with affected staff. That hasn't happened yet and will be happening in the next few days. There will be consultations convened by the Director General with affected staff in order to explain the process. Placement letters will thereafter be distributed to all SMS members within the department. An SMS brief, once that happens, there will be a convening of the entire SMS employee poll. That meeting will take place within the next week. And essentially, that meeting will be a briefing meeting to brief on next steps, important steps, and to advise around objections procedure. And once that then happens, ultimately we'll have direct placements that will be settled into the structure, and competitive placement process will then kick off with the internal advertisement going on. Thank you.
Thank you, TJ. You want to? Mm-hmm. Members, that is the grouping on the processes towards
pulling everything together in the direction of having one composite structure in the department. It's a pity that we you know, there could have been issues almost immediately raised in the course of the presentation. But I guess those are open for now. One of those which I needed very, very brief clarity, you were mentioning something about, you know, the green representing in the organism new as opposed to the old. The old, for me, I would have wanted some clarity on it, whether it refers to the old being the current, the existing one. So this suggests a new organism altogether. So we just received an organogram minutes, I think sometime last year, towards the quarter of last year, whether that represents the old or the new and in relation to the point we are raising. And the PDGs that are there vacant, whether we have any time frame. Point is raised about, you know, the PDG officially being vacant as a position or a post, whether we do have any time frame. So that's those very, you know, quick ones. And lastly, I didn't hear anything unless it is housed somewhere in the structure, maybe on the risk management side of things, on climate change. The culture is one of those areas that really is seriously affected. In this week now, also we're having a grouping on flood. So clearly, you know, climate change is an issue within, you know, our culture. Even in forestry, when it comes to matters related to, you know, mitigation and adaptation, of course. And also, when it comes to fisheries as well, climate change cuts across all of those, you know, three areas in addition to the department concerned. Members, any takers? The first man, Joy, Mr. Abram, in that order.
Chief, from last time, thank you to the DG and the Minister for a very comprehensive report of the structure. Just sorry, first of all, that it took 2 years to get into the structure. So we would have liked to see it in operation already by this time. I've got a few comments and questions maybe on it. If you look at the Olympic, and unfortunately, didn't just put it up front, we haven't had time really to study this, and we wanted to listen to see what is the direction of the department is taking. And obviously, if one looks at it on the face of it, as it was presented to us today, a lot of attention has been given to administrative issues, which is obviously correct. It must make sure that internally the structures and the administrative processes are in place, which we appreciate. I think that's the at hand. To start off, it was said that this whole structure of the department should be aligned with the strategy and the objectives. Now, what struck me is that if I look at it, as I said, it looks a lot towards, it takes a lot towards the administrative side, but very little towards the strategic objectives of the agricultural sector. And again, I refer to the strategic plan which was developed by the agricultural sector inclusively with all the role players. And I would have thought that I actually experienced it in the past that under the previous president we had a working group that actually addressed the issues directly in this proportion and made sure that the objectives of the department inclusive of everything that is necessary to make agriculture a success in South Africa. Now, if I look at page 2 or 3, it's not numbers, but where you say the background introduction is that operational legislative mandate is extensive, but then it only touches on the effective developmental side of the institution, which is obviously only one of the minor sectors that we need to attach. If I can just again stress that, right, conceived in the plan of the sector, obviously one of the pivots of the sector should be assets and new farmers, which must be addressed, and I think that has been addressed quite extensively in this plan. But the food security and economic sustainability of the sector, which is the basis of any economic viable business out there, the agriculture is a business, is not really addressed to the full extent. It only touches a little bit on markets, but you know, the government can do very little about markets and the management of it and that type of thing because of the private sector being in that situation. But if we look at food security, we need to also establish a focus in the department on that sector. And that includes the emerging sector, but it mainly focuses on the commercial sector. You know, if we lose, and we keep on losing to the commercial sector out there, we are putting the food security issue at risk. Just to give you an example, one commercial farmer produces food for 1,270 people day out and day in South Africa. And if we keep on losing them, and we've got now, the latest census in 2007 shows that they only got 39,900 an odd number of commercial farmers left. We're not replacing it, and that is why we've seen a decline in production. So what I'm saying is that in the allocation of the different pillars that we look at, and we've got nine pillars here, but I don't really see that economic sustainability issue and the food security issue being addressed. And then the other one which you also touched on, the third pillar obviously is the source management. And then we've got a lot of resources. We've got soil, water, and you mentioned the climate change, which is a huge issue at the moment in the world on agriculture. And if the department is not a leading entity in making sure that agriculture in South Africa is sustainable, and we look at these issues and plan ahead, because I mean that is what the department is there for. It's not to manage in arrears and in retrospect. It is to manage in advance. And I absolutely think that I actually must express myself clearly. I don't see enough of the real issues that matter for the agricultural sector addressed in this administrative plan. Maybe the minister can highlight, or somebody else can maybe give me some more convince me to. But for instance, food security is trusted with agrarian reform, which doesn't fit here at all. Food security fits with economic viability and management and everything else that goes with it. Agrarian reform focuses on each other. It must focus on finances, it must focus on extension, it must focus on support. It doesn't do that in this plan. It seems to be the lack of intention here.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to point the attention to some of the green posts. That would form the basis of my argument here. If you look at the brown fishery management, the last of these green blocks pages, we see that there's three posts, new posts. And that, if you look at the names of the posts, it does make sense. And then, look at the previous one, which is forestry, there's one extra green post, green block. It also makes sense if you look at the naming of it. Now, agriculture has acquired these two branches, fisheries and forestry. But there's four posts extra. Which is not a strange slash, it makes sense to me. But now the question comes to mind. The rest of the posts are all embedded in agriculture. Now when did we wake up to realize that agriculture is not functioning? Because all the other posts are here, distributed, and I'm not going to go through some of the names that make sense, some of them is a little bit in mean clarity on that, but that's like a bit too long for this discussion. So I'm not going into the detail. So And I mean, we don't have the background that the department has, but it does pose a question to me. When did we wake up to find out that we're not working? And how do we know that we are going to work from here onwards? So my questions I want to ask is now we see that excluding the vacant post, there's a 30% increase in positions. If we include the vacant posts, that means 23 on 99, which is almost 23%. So it means that we're enlarging most posts, apart from those four posts. We're enlarging agriculture with 23%. I want to know if our performance has increased by 34%. Then the questions I want to ask from this is how much money of the current budget would these changes, because it's all posts on director levels and up, how much money of the current budget would this entail, and how much increase in the budget would we need to accommodate this personnel? So you can see in which way I'm working with this one. The other one is the timeline. And this is the page I'm referring to with the red. It seems that this process, this Department of Agriculture is very good at evaluating itself, job profiles, validate graded posts, because any company that comes in and does this job, consulting and helping professional companies, they still have to talk to these people. So why are we so good at analyzing our jobs and creating our jobs and new positions and so forth, but we can't deliver? And how long did it take us to find this out? I know the minister is new and she's possibly saw these shortcomings, but that is the argument that I want to get on the floor. The minister could explain to us how she sees this, and that would be very interesting to see if we can make this, you know, department work better from that point of view. Then the other question I have is the objections panel. You said it would be independent. There must be rules how this will be established. And then I'm worried about this process of employees that must, have objections. I don't think 5 working days is fair to give to an employee to look at his situation in relation to other situations. He's not in a silo. He's not isolated in his job or her job. They've got to make a decision within 5 days. Possibly they have to go see a lawyer to think about it or some other expert. 5 days is too little. I think we must extend that period by at least 3 times. It's not going to stop working in a row if we make it 21 days. The same with the 7 days that the minister is given to consider his objections. I think if there's a lot of objections, minister, it will be a rough job if you have to do all in 7 days. And then on the early retirement, madam, when you addressed us, you trailed off early retirement and your voice trailed off a bit. I couldn't follow that. If you could just maybe elaborate on that part. Okay, that's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to thank the editor for the presentation. Chairperson, there is one thing that bothers me. And that is that, we are planning a organogram, which to my mind is very thick on administration and very thin on delivery, if one looks at this organogram. At the same time, the functions that are carried out by the Department of Agriculture are also being carried out, some of them, by the Department of Rural Development. Rural development is also engaged in the promotion of agricultural activity. What I would like to know in the responses is whether the rural development organogram some duplications of the posts that are being created over here. Jefferson, at the end of the day, I believe that what is important is to have the type of structure which will be very strong on delivery. You know, you can phone the department at any given time and look for a particular person. I may just say, you know, in jest, there are too many chiefs here and there are no Indians. And you ask for a specific official, oh no, but they're in a workshop. Phone again, oh no, but they're in a meeting. They're just not available. So when does delivery take place? When those that are seeking delivery are unable to access all the people with the titles. If you could tell us in what way will this organogram assist delivery, because that is what counts at the end of the day, the end product. Chairperson, the other issue here is, I see Mr. Detroit has asked this question, but I would just like to find out from the CFO what percentage of the budget would go to salaries. If this particular organogram is implemented. Now, of course, we are not aware of what the budget will be in the coming financial year, but still you should have some or other ballpark figure. If not the percentage of the budget, then at least the amount that this organogram will cost us. Whereas again, Chairperson, it is a question of investment and return. I mean, no company in the country is going to have officials, an organogram, where the budget for that organogram is going to surpass the anticipated income of that particular company. And we need to run these departments like businesses. They are businesses. Because it's a question of money being put in, and we need to see a return. Chairperson, the other question here is, there's this one slide. Unfortunately, these slides are not numbered, and may I just humbly advise that it would be good if slides are numbered, that we can refer to the specific one. In this slide, what I read is that there have been certain processes that have already been completed. Now, when you say yes, in this last bottom right-hand red block, placement panel finalized on 5 and 13 January 2011. Does this mean that it is merely a panel that has been finalized, the panel that will do the placement, or has placement been finalized? Furthermore, Chairperson, job security, of course, is extremely important. And we have aims of creating 500,000 jobs per annum. We've got to create much more than that because we've lost so much. We have to be extremely careful with regard to the rights of employees. But some of the processes that are being spoken of here, other members have alluded to it, are to my mind things that need to be looked at very, very carefully. When we talk here of the overview of the placement process, when you talk of them, Jefferson, you see, when on this particular slide, overview of the placement process objection, the last square, the minister should, as far as reasonably possible, consider the objection within whatever time frame. Now, you see, when we say should, I mean, this is not a regulation, it is merely a presentation. It means that it's a bit of a wishy-washy term. There is no compulsion. I believe that one must be more specific.
that the minister must, within reasonable, as far as reasonably possible, do blah, blah, blah. Should means, well, you know, mach nie, that sort of thing. And I don't think that is very clear and explicit. Chairperson, if the placement process has been completed, of course I don't have a response to that yet, but if it has been completed, whether any objections have been received, and if so, to what degree and to what level have objections been received. Chairperson, for the present, I may just say that one of the issues that one expects should feature very prominently is some specifics with regard to the whole issue of what happened on the ground. This organogram, Chairperson, is to me too much of an office-bound organogram. And agriculture is a portfolio which has to see deliverables on the ground. You need to see what is happening on the ground. And what is important is what comes out of there. We have, for example, developing farmers in our country. To what extent will this new organogram with so many chief directors of blah, blah, blah assist those developing farmers to graduate into becoming commercial farmers? I don't see that in this organogram. As I say, it is too much of an office-bound organogram. For example, Chairperson, I don't know whether any reference is made yet to anybody that will be responsible for overall extension services in the country. Fine, I accept that the provinces are also, it's also their competency. But that sort of thing should be driven. And the criticisms here are all aimed at bringing about an improved situation where we can see the sector grow, where we can contribute towards food security and also exports. For example, Chair, we are currently a country that still imports numerous commodities which should be grown in this country, which should be developed in this country. We are net importers of beef, for example. We are net importers of broilers, chicken, a quarter million tons per annum. And those quarter million tons per annum have consumed double that amount of waste products where they come from, where they import from. These are the sort of issues that need to be addressed. And I don't see how in this organogram effect will be given to that. And I would like to have an explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay,
let's as the committee, our concern right now on the demand. As my colleagues have already said, the new of Urbanagram, it is too much for the administration, which means the budget, even the economic budget, would be impossible to administer the salaries and the like. But what about the new office? I just want to add my concern on the new organism that I see much of it all the administration, not all the new office.
Thank you. Remember, the minister and those that become, you shall realize that there have been emphasis on a few areas, data on the report itself. However, I guess that the issue here really has so much to do with the extent in which the levels of importance are supposed to be attacked. For instance, extension officer issue is raised here. But as to the extent in which elevation of staff, especially if you deal with the methods related to deliverables,
get visas are very key. Also, the issues of climate change are raised. But again, the level and the extent to which you might wish to elevate those, so that they are key in a number of activities that can be engaged. That's what of the extent to which the impact on what is expected of the department, leveling the playing field, making conditions relevant, and over and above growing, you know, the agriculture sector, forestry and fisheries. So the extent to which those are relevant, you might wish also to say to see a situation where those the importance are the importance of those is actually elevated accordingly. The minister is not new anymore, Mr. Detroit. She's been around. I think the issues have been raised, Minister, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for those questions. But I was hoping that the defense, the minister, remember that we said they would have had time to study all the documents we have given them diligently and very respectfully. Now, if the members had read some of the documents we have given them, they would have realized that the country now has a new growth path strategy. We gave you copies of the new growth path strategy. In the new growth path strategy, agriculture is highlighted as the second most important area for job creation. The members have also bothered to read the documents which we have given you. You would have realized that there is now a new integrated growth and development plan for agriculture, forestry, and fishing. Some of the members even expressed the hope that we would extend the deadline for input. So the members, please go and read the integrated growth and development plan for agriculture, forestry, and fishing so that you can comment on that plan. So that you will also realize that the agriculture sector plan of 2001 and 2002 is old, it's outdated, it's finito. It is not going to be implemented, finished and planned. There is, whether it has been agreed upon or not, there is a new... No, there is a new... How many times must I tell you on the member? There is a new growth path strategy for the country. It's got nothing to do with your review plan. That was when you were the chair of education. Please, you are now have to go and read the integrated growth and development plan for agriculture, forestry, and fishery. And that is what we're going to implement. Whether you like it or not, that is the plan of the current government. We are no longer living in the past. So please stop living in the past and come up to date with what is happening now. There is a new growth path strategy for our country. We discussed it again extensively in the cabinet report last week. We'll bring it to you and discuss it extensively with you again. Please do not be locked in the past. This change is happening. Because this sector plan is not, we are not working. We are not going to implement.
Can we avoid dialogue?
So,
Minister, I'm sure you can
Chairperson, the tone of the Minister requires us to answer. If she was just toned down about the past because we're not living in the past, we are aware of the growth path. You can't tell us, don't read it like she's telling children. We are not children. We're aware of this. We are discussing this document. She must not try and skirt around it. Please.
So anyway, this organogram for organizational structure has been planned to deliver on the new growth path. Food security and agrarian reform is a new branch, natural extension support services at the level of the chief director is a green dot, national extension reform at the level of the director is a green dot, national extension support at the level of the director, these are all three green posts. It's under the branch food security and agrarian reform. So there are three new posts just dedicated to extension services. There's a new post also dedicated to sectoral colleges. Those are new posts under the Promise to Security and the Greater Reform, responding to the new growth part and also responding to the performance agreement which the Minister has signed with the Premier. The new organizational structure could not be implemented because DPSA had to approve the new organizational structure. That's why I have said over and over in the portfolio committee. So the fact that we are 2 years in government and the fact that we are only implemented now is because the DPSA only approved this organizational structure late in last year. That was when I could appoint a new director. I would also like to continue to say that we have not yet done any placement. No, none of the placements have been done. We have first brought this to the portfolio committee, and we will only do the placement once we have informed you and once we have briefed you. Therefore, no objections have been received. The timeline will also be spelled up. I think once we have briefed you, we will enter into the process of the placement and those timelines will be given to you. The market access, there's a new approach in government to market access. The government is now working as part of BRIC, in which we are looking for further access into Brazil, Russia, India, China. I spent most of the part of my year last year negotiating with Brazil, Russia, India, China for market access. Market access has also changed to where we're incorporating the continent Africa as a broader platform of 1.3 billion people as part of the market for South Africa. So we believe that the private sector is no longer solely responsible for market access. Once more, I'm asking who is on board of the new growth part. So yes, there's a number of changes because there's a different thinking around agriculture. So as soon as we have that different thinking around agriculture, we will also not perceive this as an organogram that is strong on administrative support and reform implementation. Because we will then be on the same page. What does that mean now? We have a different view of what we deliver. Because we have a different view on what we are going to deliver. We are going to deliver it on the performance agreement which we signed with the President, and we are going to be delivering on the new growth part, we are going to be delivering on ISAC 2, and we are going to be delivering on integrated growth and development plan for agriculture forest position. And this organizational structure is not going to be. The organizational structure is not going to assist small local farmers to become commercial farmers. That is in the performance agreement which we have signed with the President, and that is in the new growth part. The new organizational structure is not going to change matters when it comes to the importation of wheat. But the new growth part will, because the new growth part says to these guys, we have to look at tariffs and how import and export tariffs are working against our farmers, and we are then complying the GDI and economic development to look at a new tariff regime to in fact manage import and export tariffs in our country. The new organization structure is not going to do it. So that function is seated for the GDI. Thank you.
I don't want to say that when it comes to the issue of food security, I agree with the Honourable Board on that a part of food security has to do with the food supply of the country. This is a part of commercial extension, the choice of that's an important element. Another part of food security
what's called household food security. We may have food in the country, but household, we're not looking at food. So we have also are working with food security. So, and for us, for the number of interventions that we want to have on, and so that we can secure food security for the country, but also for all households. Now, we will come there to present what our new framework is on the market. And the good thing is that the cabinet has agreed on our framework, but some of these things we can only announce it after the recognition of the work in the future of the country that is there. We are working with commercial agriculture. The Integrated Core Growth and Development of the Department of Health has been developed in consultation with them. We've been working through it with the COO Forum, in which almost all of the organizers have participated. They have asked for extensions, we agreed to that, but we told them that it's time of this. And so I think that process concluded by December. Related to our work with commercial agriculture, I think it's important that we clarify the health interaction within the highest office in the land around specific issues that commercial agriculture speaks about. Move right to the office. We are ready, we are now working for that highest office to bring us on board so that we can work with it. We've already done our comprehensive response to the issues that we have. So at that point, we will make that for that particular point. I think Mr. Chatsuri will talk about the money that are available for the infrastructure. Now, I also want to ask to go back to the issue, and just to emphasize the issue of deliverance. I think one of them was a reason to show deliverance that this is an issue to the team. If you look at the structure, what we have, we've never had a proper department on policy planning, monitoring and evaluation, which would be an ongoing work of the department to check whether all the things that are committing ourselves to do are they doing that, okay? To develop the relevant policies around that. That is just identical. This is one of the areas that are fixing through this structure. If you look at, again, with, next week is economic development and trade in market. That talks principally to commercial agriculture. Well, the people were always raising questions around market access. These were always raising issues about trade issues with us, is commercial agriculture. We now have the whole unit. Not only do we have commercial agriculture market access, it is after that we have the whole unit at a DTP level focusing on this issue. Those issues, because the issue of access to market is a principal issue for us. We are now having to deal with the pathway for competing with the market. So you all understand that market issue. So that's now we have the whole division that is looking at that. The other one on food security and academic, I think somebody I've already referred to that we're talking about a more broader concept of food security than the one of national food security. So we're having the whole unit that's going to be dealing with that. That unit will address the sensitive of it. Because it will address the whole issue of the graduation of smallholder. And I said, we will bring all the teachers of that place, which is now in the country, to all our members after the teachers. So we are, we think that the structure actually positioning us to deliver. But there is a challenge that we've got to attend to, which is a broader challenge, I think, of agriculture. And some of the things that the minister has said, and I think it's been there for some time, that the bulk of our staff is in the office, not the government. So that they come doing to take them out of the offices into the villages and the farms and all that. And that's what I think is very, very, very difficult. That's the work that we're going to be done. And it's not going to be easy work. If you talk about changing people's pattern of life that they have had for the past 20 years, to tell the people now that they must go back to the villages, to where they're not seeing the nice life in Papa that they like. That's what the monumental action of open access. But that is me. I think it's an inherited problem. That can help us a little bit, but overall it's going to be helpful. And all of us, hopefully supported by the political community, will have to work together to change this. I mean, there's a question in the document I represent, in which if you look at the amount of salary we're paying and the availability of the extensive service, it's normal. It's something that's going to happen in the 20th century. We have to find a way to do that. think the last point of the comment is on the implication of the development. I would say if there is a mixed degradation, it's then quite similar where integration has been in the competition. There is similar work between us and those developments, but it is mainly on work on the ground, not conceptual. They work on the from them before, but they also work on the ground. They are mainly here to teach infrastructure, to advance the irrigation schemes, but what they talk about is the roads, etc., etc. But there is, when it comes to the irrigation schemes, we also work together on the land for the irrigation schemes, etc. But they have also, I mean, I think that one of the things with them, but they will think about them. And they are willing to work, and we will not stop people who want work to promote other countries. If people are having need of whatever is the goal of the country, we welcome them. We will need as much as we can do. But it's not necessarily, it's not the position of function. It's work that they, in understanding their own money, they find themselves in the union that are offered things that were offered. But I think that's a big problem.
Thank you, teacher. The structure, the new structure, will cost about 19 additional 15 million on compensation of the employees. One fight. Thank you.
That's it. I think there was also a question on whether the process is having conflict and any objection are
possible. We felt at the height of the process, we felt that we cannot move ahead without coming to you. So we stopped some certain processes not to come to the committee. Because we see that some of the challenges are often quite a similar nature. And it's important for us to ensure that all the key stakeholders are on the same page. So we need to stop. So once we've gone through this process, we will now run so that at least by the end of the process, we'll complicate. So it is within that context that objections will be raised, but also we've already been briefed people who are going to get that we wanted to meet with you.
Facilities management and
sector of development, reform funding management, that type of thing, development finance, I think that's a good move. For future, that will be a good one. But we'll see what you put into the post, because you it doesn't matter if you have a good structure, but you're going to not put the right people there. The other one, corporate services also look like you could develop some problems there. There's a bit of a muddling up of things, information, knowledge, information management, information technology, communication technology. It's like a couple of functions all in line, but I'm not sure. I don't want to say how much this one as well, because I don't know much about this post. I just studied it. But just from an experience point of view, this one looks like one we should monitor. And then, of course, the executive support of the Director General. I think I have a little question mark around public relations services. You have to look at that one. I'm glad you put in risk management in education. It's always a good move. Together with your certain audience, most people directly support with you. So this is where you will have to make or break it. And then on this, coming back to this big one, it's a relative flat management structure. You've got a lot of people reporting to you, so you will be busy, you should be busy. And we're glad that you haven't got the levels built in under it, you know. So let's see how it goes with this for a question mark.
Thank you. I also just want to add one or two closing remarks. First of all, I think I would like to tell the minister that I'm not criticizing you at all. I'm trying to positively make input to help the sector going forward. And if you take it as a personal attack, I'm sorry about it, but that was never meant to do that. Secondly, referring to the cooperation with the agricultural sector role players, that is most important. I mean, one cannot drive a government department without consulting and in harmony and in alignment with your partners that are doing the job on the ground. That is all that why I'm referring to and have referred to the agricultural sector plan. And to my opinion, those sector plans, priorities and pillars are still the same where agriculture is being built on. Obviously, the new growth path has put forward agriculture as a priority, which we appreciate. I think that is, we must think that we're not appreciating the fact that the new growth path is now for the first time recognizing that agriculture has a new role in South Africa to take the country forward. We haven't got food security in our country, then obviously, I mean, we're going to fall down as far as that's concerned. And cost of price and food, relatively today, the cost of food prices internationally is going to rise tremendously in the next couple of years because of the huge demand that there is for food and the constant slowing down of production. And we need development as far as that's concerned. And, you know, to talk about market access, I think that is one of our biggest problems. But the reason for it is not to open a market. I mean, markets are open for us. But the fact is, the matter is that we are not competitive. We cannot compete against those prices of the international market. It's just that a major surplus that we cannot sell anywhere. Because, I mean, we cannot sell it at a loss. If we sell it at a loss, the farmers will stop producing. And then we go out of production. So I think we must just understand how the issues work and what I'm trying to say. If we are going to exploit new markets, we will have to internally look at how we're going to support our farmers with production processes to have the quality right, to have new products developed that is available at the moment and that is in demand, to have standards, phytosanitary standards that is internationally accepted. Otherwise, we're out of the market. I mean, whether you've got an open market or not, it doesn't matter, but these are the factors that play a role in market access. And I'm just again saying we should recognize what the challenges is in the sector and that we should focus more on those challenges to get the sector viable, economically viable. We are not supporting and subsidizing like the various countries of the world. But under the WTO we've got specific measures that we can apply to help our own local industry to grow and have some benefits in that respect. So from my side, I'm trying to positively influence and tell you what I see is wrong in this, what the focus is on, maybe place somewhere on the wrong issues and not on the right issues. And if I do criticize, take it as that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, now that we know that no placements have been done, that this particular block that I referred to is merely that a placement panel has been finalized. Now, after you have completed the processes of the acceptance of your claim by the powers that be, within what time frame do you anticipate implementing this organogram? Secondly, Chairperson, one must remember that the private sector will only develop something if there is a market for it. They would not, for argument, say, go and do something, plant a commodity for which there is no market. Hence, you will find that in the current season, maize, the percentage of hectareage that has been planted to maize is reduced to what we had last year. Because it's market forces that dictate what sort of commodity you should actually plant. Then, Chairperson, what we are trying to say is that government staff is to help create the sort of environment within which agriculture can prosper. That is government stuff. And we support government where it tries to do exactly that. I want to refer to the New Growth Path. It has several objectives. And agriculture can play a major role in helping to create jobs. But you must also remember that whilst it does not fall under the Department of Agriculture, this new ESTA amendment to ESTA, let me tell you now, if it goes through in its current form, we will see more job losses on farms. We will find that many farmers will not want to employ more workers because then there's a responsibility on the farmer to provide permanent housing for them and rights on the farm. So one has to look at all these issues that can impact on agriculture moving forward. Then, Chairperson, with regard to rural development, yes, their task should be to provide the necessary infrastructural development to provide for rural development. But one must also remember that the department is actively engaged in agricultural activity. Not that I'm against it. Any extra activity will help. But one has to have some clear definition, some clear line as to where the Department of Agriculture's responsibility starts and ends in terms of agricultural development and where rural development, agricultural activity starts and ends. One would like to know where these things are distinctly demarcated, so that we know which department to go to for what reason. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the issue of imports. Yes, I've heard the Minister. The tariffs, issues like that, are not controlled by her department. We acknowledge that. It's controlled by another department. What we are saying is that there's so much potential in our country to see to it that we limit the number of imports. For example, we are importing on a daily basis, annualized, the equivalent of 800,000 chickens per day. And we said that we as Department of Agriculture must find ways and means of promoting our people. I see the Minister doesn't agree with me, but that's her prerogative. I said that we should find ways and means of limiting.
Can we ask for other? Can we?
Because you all know that our people. And thank you very much.
And avoid dialogue.
No, it's not a dialogue, Chair. What we are saying is that there are certain things that we can do And I believe, Chairperson, that if we, all of us, bend it together, there's a lot that we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, the flight goes from corporate service to chief financial officer and also stakeholder and so on and so forth. I see here a very clear demarcated regime on fisheries over and above whatever the department is doing. On corporate services, you know, you have chief director, human resource, information, fisheries operations support. And again, on the finances, is the chief service continuously being treated like a separate regime within the department? Even when it comes to support services, you continuously have fisheries being treated as a different separate. Of course, when you look at the fisheries, you know, branch on its own, it certainly does not have those, you know, corporate services, but they are found within the department. But you do not have, you know, any separated forestry, you know, chief directorate within the corporate services, for instance, agriculture support or operational support, you know, as a separate. This is informed by an understanding that says continuously, you know, the fisheries continues to be having its own accounting practices outside of the total department itself. I think that's for me, I really wish to be clarified on, so that as we move forward, we get a very clear sense of what it is. The last one, talking about special colleges, with the current state of affairs in colleges in South Africa, where some of these are collapsing on our faces, as to, without really getting into any detail about what is going on currently, but a sense of what that, you know, seeks to achieve as we speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think most of your questions I'll hand over to the DG. But just on the agricultural colleges, we agreed to reopen all agricultural colleges, those that were closed, and to resuscitate and revitalize a number of those who are currently facing problems. The tension point right now is quite not. There's a number of problems we have structured at all. There's a number of problems that we're dealing with. But the only matter of agricultural policy is a subject on its own that we could really report on. But then again, if I come back to some of the members, the new growth path does make a vision for us to address the entire regime of import and export. We have also created a vacancy and a post for agriculture on ICAC. ICAC is the body that looks at all the tariffs, the entire tariff regime. I'm not very happy with our representative and the office of the DG. We put a very formidable person on ICAC to argue for the place of agriculture. The other challenge is the DG. The maize problem, I think we've come with the maize presentation over and over again. And we've assisted the maize industry to find alternative markets. The problem is now that we are more organized than they are. We have two large buyers for that labor. And they themselves are not yet organized to bring the labor actually to the buyers. Because two large buyers, maybe, want to make it. They cannot come up with it. They cannot get themselves organized enough to produce the labor. So I think from their side, we need to be more organized as well. We are on our side, we have gone out of our way to find the market and to find the buyer. The time frame on the board of our in the next 2 months, once we have presented this to you, we'll be able to close the finalizing the process. I think that what the honorable members should understand quite carefully is that at no stage do I view this work as personal, and especially honorable member Bartman, this has got nothing to do with me personally. I do my job, I don't have anything when it comes to my job. But the problem I have is the limitation within the argument you present. And that you have an obsession and a fixation with the agriculture sector plan. And everything you mention and everything you do and everything you value is within your obsession with the agriculture sector plan. And you need to move away from this obsession. You're fixated with the agriculture sector plan. And we've moved past it, we've moved beyond it. So I'm just afraid that you are leading you further and further behind. The honorable members, of course, thank you for your very valuable comments. Now we need to really analyze your program. The organization structure cannot be everything for everybody. And the kind of comments you make in honorable members is going to be because you're pointing to areas which we have to go focus on. Those areas that you are highlighting to us are marvelous. I'll go back and pay specific attention to those areas. Those comments you have made are valuable comments. They are really assisting me. I cannot do everything with an organogram. What we are doing around policy monitoring and evaluation is to, in fact, gear our organizational structure to meet a new organization of government, where the president has a policy and planning unit or minister in the presidency, and the president has a monitoring and evaluation minister and deputy minister in the presidency, whereby we have signed performance agreements with particular outcomes and outputs with the president. I think our role as a portfolio committee should also be this year to look carefully at the performance agreement as signed with the president, and the performance agreement the cluster as signed with the president. Then you'll be able to see the synergy between rural development and agriculture, as we are responsible for the same output. Then you won't become worried about the duplication, and you won't see it as duplication, but you will see it as part of the synergy in the new output that government has to discuss. So I think the way to go, the way forward, is for the portfolio committee to familiarize itself with those key performance outputs and measurable indicators that we are now going to be doing as a government, so that you can also monitor those outputs. I think it would be important that you also monitor those outputs, and that you don't also just monitor in a model. But what it is now is that you're trying to dump a lot of things onto the organizational structure, which you in fact turn into a model. And I appreciate the minister, remember the point, for actions and participation. Point it out. Go back to corporate services. I will go do it. Go back to the corporate services. I'll certainly go do it. Thank you, honorable member.
Just
after
comment, on one question and then ask him to comment on the challenge. I think the point Honorable Abraham around the extent of importation that is happening in this country, I think I share your point that we should do something about it. There is a team that is asked to work on this, to
previous statement of how many agriculture and agriculture items are we importing, what percentage are they, and then to have a counter strategy. That's also that it is a level of volume that we can measure now. Well, do we have other places around transport cost development that we can communicate? So we are working to go to the main and also to the department. I think the president, the fact that we now have the plane monitoring in policy means that these strategy questions will help people who are not have such a good substitution for the president said. We don't have that in the past. In the past, we will be like a growing regularly doing day to day things, but no one is fitting to the substitution. We not have that capacity. So I take the point, and I think that we have to report to you what are we doing about the extent of imports, what is our counter strategy around the soil. That's the actually capture of the plan.
Thank you, Gigi. Around the issue around fishery itself, there are two important factors here. The first being that fisheries, in terms of the location, you say from Cape Town versus forestry and agriculture, the last part of the functions are based in Pretoria. For that reason, support services have been decentralized on a large basis within fisheries in Cape Town, and that's why you're seeing it within the support services functions themselves. On a finance basis, particularly because of the Marine Resource Fund, because of that particular fund there is specific support service that the finance service has been designed around that particular fund, and that's why it continues to exist in that fashion. But lastly as well, in terms of when the fisheries function was brought into the department, given the fact that it was brought in later after the forestry function came in, there has to be some defining at a later place where there will be a greater education of fisheries. It just couldn't happen within a very short time frame. That was in the report in an organizational staff at the time.
I'm not convinced on all the parts of the fisheries. I guess it should really form part of the broader discussion as to what an extent can we really decentralize and decentralize even in terms of branches, whether we can. I mean, it really says to me we can easily have a branch on forestry, you know, located somewhere here and there. And perhaps that's where, you know, most activities in terms of forestry are concerned could be located. If it justifies along those lines, the rationale for me should really be saying it was fisheries activity, hence it is located here. And for me, I think it has so much to do with the historical, you know, factors and what you have inherited. As to whether we justify that by continuing with that situation, for me, it's a big question. Because the aim is to have one department rather than having a federal type of department where in one section has got also its own corporate service somewhere. And having its own financial accounting somewhere. And those are the kind of practical issues for me that really come to mind. At the end of the day, we want to have one department. Rather than having, you know, which has been the case all along with the people, you know,
that
division.
We take the
point.
We will have to integrate your concern in the practice. As we are forced into this now, if we can't go back to the two things, around what is the business, but it is, I think, the concerns are in the past concept. And that as we implement the structure, we refine it, we will treat it, and so that we do not have to our proper authority. But I think it is complicated.
And there's that, Mama, here. Can you be the last one conclude this part of our
Maybe the minister was not to answer that long or too complicated, but she mentioned the story about the maize, the position we're in now with the maize at that market, but that the people cannot deliver now. I just want to make sure about this somehow, sometime, that I read that even if we can export the maize, I read in the papers that, I read on the radio, that they said that if they export the maize, they cannot actually export it because we don't have enough rail to get it to the harvest. Now that is, it's again another department that has neglected maybe in their other aspect of the economy, and agriculture has a market, and we have it in the silos, but we can't get it to the... I must just make sure what's the problem there. And then in such a case, this is the part that is now, we don't need an answer now, but something you should think about is that when such a situation arises with transport or some other issue on stepping onto another department is involved, how would this organogram then kick into action very effectively to solve this problem, not only after it's happened, but before? Because really, this maize thing has come along, and somebody must identify the logistics around it. So we would have known, 6 months or 18 months ago, we must know, look, if we're producing and we get the market, are we going to get it out? And I know we focus on our own portfolios, and suddenly out of the blue, we don't have enough trade. We don't have proper. Take it, and then it becomes a problem. Thank you.
Okay, you want to respond quickly to those two?
I think the issue around a couple of issues of things. The minister is correct. There are two potential importers of the meat. That is in that department. And we go back to the people who control the meat. And they gather the order for the meat. Please, the facility. It's been working for 2 months now. Well, I think between the farmer, the silo, and the trader, it's a very complicated relationship. So we are not so sure what, but we spoken to the relevant people. So we asked the organized club, who do we talk to? There are two buyers, one from the Middle East and the one from Asia. They want to buy the meat. But Mono has been begging, they are not delivering to us, the people who are supposed to be the deal. So there's a whole mystery around who controls how the marketing of this commodity open. That's a challenge for him. But that's not really that. But maybe we'll give it maybe in a certain way. To explain the exact detail, what we think or what exactly happened. But we've been speaking to them about what happened. On the issue of the tangent, all I can say is that there is no one who's going to lose a job as a marketing sponsor. So the job is guaranteed. Someone will be able to wake up in the morning and do something in which his competency can be enrolled. That's not the issue. Okay? But the issue is that we might, as we are, refining the process of placement, especially in competition for jobs, and have been lost out on the job, did not be immediately replaced on a particular role. That's the kind of organization we could call about. But then the details we should comment on.
You should have been principle, all that it means is that it's a fault that existed in the old structure but no longer exists in the new structure. We've only identified two faults of that nature, and I can give you an example of one. So one was a fault in the old structure that sat in the DG's office, which is Chief Program Officer. That fault no longer exists if you look at the new organizational structure. Some of those functions may have been moved out here, but the fault no longer exists. So that is a redundant fault, essentially. It doesn't mean that the employee no longer has a job in the department. They will be accommodated out.
Thank you, members and also Minister Ambiji. I think that helps us go forward and also gives us a very clearer picture to where we are and where we're going in terms of the structures within the department. Without really waste of time, we shall quickly jump straight in the next department that we have before we break for tea, have a briefing on the plan. The committee, I'm sure Minister and Chief, you are aware that it has conducted its own oversight visit in Upington areas. I, for one, was meant to go, and unfortunately, I didn't pick up with being able to travel. So the committee did go. It would be important, maybe, also to get a sense from the Minister and the TG as to your own briefings as far as the plans are concerned. Thank you.
That we share with the Portfolio Committee the present challenge that the country is going through with the flood. We move on to the flood. We will read or talk under the podium with an introduction, yeah, the rainfall review, the work that our minister has done in condition, the preliminary assessment, actions taken by staff in the ministerial committee, and the expected going forward in the next month and having to make recommendations. South Africa experienced wind very cool things over the country in 2010. Assessment could have said to ascertain the extent of the drought from the country, this is the national drought has been using to request drought observation. Big rain was at least been very concerned, but the lot of rain and led to flooding in some cases, however, some areas such as the country, Pedro, and other things, still experience that condition. Third assessment is conducted in the province of the volume of imaging. Over most provinces, above normal rainfall could continue to be received at the beginning of January. Third aspect will continue to impair the game culture in Pacific Northern States, Northwest and Pomalanga. In some cases, it was due to overflow from them rather than direct for government. On the 16th of January, there was flood over by the minister, our minister from DAF, I think also from the local government over. That was seen by Mwanzi in the Northern Kings, as well as Rumor in Christian in the Northwest. Flooding has been reported in 8 provinces, including the city. The extent of the damage is wide from province to province. Most affected provinces are Northern Kings, Northwest, Central to Orange, and Baltimore. The impact of the flood has made mostly on water logging on top of top and damaged infrastructure at the end of the land, canal, as well as the existing. Farmers that have not been allowed to take an unable position and farms have been removed along the river and assisted to a kick off to those along the river. Our preliminary, and I want to emphasize that these are preliminary assessments because the actual details and the final assessment can only be done once the 5 million per country. Right now, that's preliminary in the area of the country. So, it will not be a true picture of what it is. It would be important that we have a professional approach to the market. In this case, about 29,000 services in Bumalaga, 4,000 from the country, and housing people in front of the country, in other cases, 20,000 hectares in the Kuopo, 2,730,000 hectares in the northwest, 1,400 hectares. Most provinces reported sheep, cattle, goods, broilers, and wild animals being affected by floods. Some provinces are still affected by damage. Agricultural and services, housing structures are reported damaging most of these provinces, as well as farming equipment, irrigation schemes, electrical cables, and low line equipment. In this state, an estimated 2,125 people are affected fully by housing. I want to say that the offers very close to the department of labor really attend, in particular, the welfare of the affected farmers, as well as the Department of Social Development, to be sure of the public national disaster management committee. In general, the associate estimated the highest amount of flood damage is 110 million dollars. 10 million is the lowest, it's 100,000. And now they say the specific amount of damage is unknown, but it is affected to 50,000 of the 50 million damage. That's why I think it's a million dollars. Actions taken by staff. There is a recognition of ego warning and advisory formation in the sector in order to mitigate administrative losses. Monitoring the quality of government and physically conducting assessment in affected areas is done. Without moving that to bring up work in the informed about the Pakistan. Our assessment must be collected depending on what others have affected the dam. So there is also a daily report on what's happening with the dam every day the meeting goes to the part around it. Above normal report is still expected over the country. The projection from the water service is that we're going to have the floods at least up until May or this May. They may not start all the countries, but we're coming up at least up until May. The soil is saturated and continuing floods are positive. Apart from the water, so the water service is good. The high water reserves and inaccessible farming areas have prevented proper assessment and verification throughout the animation. Full assessment and verification is conducted after the water has subsided. The poor quality of infrastructure is communicated to the program. Part of the agricultural department is very old in poorly maintained, particularly farming and the infrastructure. So the issue of the attractiveness and the danger of pain is something that we have to be aware of and we need to work with farmers to ensure that we are able to manage the challenge of the flood. The estimated damage of flood damage would be up to 2 years of the in the park. Thank you very much.
But that's a straightforward briefing on the flood and the details of what's done. Any specific feedback, Bosman?
Yes, thank you. Also for the opportunity to just make a few remarks on this. I think first of all, Minister, we must thank you for taking the trouble to go to these areas, because it is important that we are seen to care for the people that are involved in the flood. I suppose you know that we as Portfolio Committee also went to have a look at some of the areas, not as extensive as yourself, and we also got to see what the damage is and what may be the reason, possible reasons. And what I would like to say maybe is that we should, from these incidents, we should maybe take a lead to plan ahead for future future floods in the future or other damage. And the first point that I would like to make is that in terms of disaster management and risk management, I think we need to again look at our position as far as that is concerned. What we have seen on the ground and what we experience, the people that they are suffering immediate losses and hardship and personal losses as far as houses and so forth is concerned. And we are not always in a position to immediately get in with finance and support as far as that is concerned. So maybe we should again look at our strategies, work together. I know that there is an interdepartmental committee and that the other departments are also involved. And that is where the problem normally starts. Because as far as the flood are concerned, I still believe that we have actually had man-made floods in this instance where insufficient planning was done by the Department of Water Affairs as far as the flow of the water around from the start of the flooding areas, and that is the catchment areas of the dams, the first dam that was starting to fill up, and eventually the floods were kept up instead of being rolled down. The result is that the two big rivers, Orange and the Vaal River, at one stage jointly were released a lot of water, which caused the damage. And I think one should maybe ask the Department of Water Affairs, I know that they say they do not agree with it, but we should get involved in to see whether they have really done the best that they could in managing this flood. Also that we can take from this is that we can maybe in future have a more proper holistic plan as far as the management of the water is concerned in through the dam system, so that we don't see this happening again. I think the second thing that I would like to maybe put on the table again, and we've seen it, that the walls that were built to stop the overflowing, maybe should be looked after much better, and we should maybe have a system in place where the department who is actually responsible for maintaining the planted areas or the areas where flooding has the potential to occur, that we make sure that we have at least got some sort of a maintenance system on the walls that keeps the flooding out. That is part of that is something that we must do the planning better. We must maybe have a holistic plan in place, and we must look at the system where the government assists in the insurance model, like the international world does. We can maybe learn from them. And we've done a local study in South Africa as well, and there is a booklet available on how to manage disasters in South Africa. I think one of the issues that I'm worried about is that the minister has made an announcement, and I hope she was quoted wrongly, that there would be no support for commercial farmers to do disasters. And we've seen farmers, and how you can distinguish between the commercial and small-scale farmers, but there were small-scale farmers at our meeting yesterday who suffered all their crops. And if they do not get support, I think that it's quite clear that they will not be able to carry on with their farming activity. So, eventually in the process, I think it is a little bit premature to now announce that there's not going to be support. I think there is a system, and I think it is spelled out in this presentation as well, that we should first wait and evaluate the loss. Then we should demarcate those areas which are under serious threat and have a disaster area declared as far as that's concerned. And then, obviously, that is the way we do it. Then we go back to government and we say, listen, if in this area there are so many of these people that need definite assistance, whether it's 100% or 50% or 20% assistance, so that we can make sure that they can carry on with the farming activities in the future. And then, obviously, I think there was also a remark made about the workers. We've seen in those areas, and that is only in one area, the Uppington area, that they tend to lose about 24,000 workers in that area. With their families, we're talking of that amount of nearly 100,000 people that are going to suffer from not being able to have a meal. So some system in this disaster risk management system must address this immediately, because I mean that is not a long-term thing that will happen within the next couple of months, that people will not have job opportunities anymore. As well as seasonal workers, I think we haven't even seen the seasonal workers included in this situation. So I think we take note and we're thankful for the minister that he went out to see the situation, but what I want to stress is that we need planning, we need to take notice of what has happened in this instance and make sure that the issues that we can manage better, that we do that in the future.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to speak on the record, and I'm sure I speak for all our members, our gratitude to the Ministerial Committee that visited the flood-stricken area, and also thank the DG for this presentation. Chairperson, I want to rather come down to the specifics. This is definitely not a flood which was caused by excessive rain in that particular area where the floods have occurred. What one must remember is that the Orange River has its source almost in the Shutu, and the Vaal River has its source in the Ermelo area, where Ermelo was once comfortable. And
unfortunate thing here is that adequate action was not taken timely to release smaller quantities of water from the dams as they were filling up. But you know, again, Chairperson, a question of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Department of Water Affairs has to plan in such a way that at the end of the rainy season, you will have all these dams virtually 100% full. I mean, that is the target. And it could be human error or whatever. There's no point playing the blame game. But as the Honorable Bosman has mentioned, we need to be aware from our experience as to what has really contributed towards the flooding that then took place further downstream. Chairperson, there's another problem. Unfortunately, it doesn't fall under agriculture. But many of the people who have put up expensive structures alongside these rivers are people who are not really harmed. These are basically, wealthy men's playgrounds. And they have built in what they normally call a 1-in-50-year flood line or 1-in-100-year flood line. And I feel, Chairperson, that there must be the tightening up of regulation to see that not only there, but you even read what happened in some of the urban areas where homes were built within the flood line and that the flood had wiped them all out and in many instances caused extensive damage. I feel that our policing, our monitoring must be sharpened, that people do not build where there is the chance of a flood 1 in 50 years or 1 in 100 years. In fact, Chairperson, what I've heard from experts is that we are now getting floods 1 in 15 years, which could cause devastating damage. So that needs to be looked into. And I'm asking the department and the minister to take this up with the other ministers because it's not something that's an agriculture competence. Secondly, Chairperson, if one looks at the damage that we saw yesterday, one must remember that along the Orange River, particularly in the Northern Cape, you have this situation where the farming is of a very intensive nature. And as we flew over the area, you saw the sort of infrastructure like massive tech stores and irrigation systems and all sorts of things that had been invested there. I don't know what the total amount of that investment would be, but if it's not hundreds of millions, it could be very close or even surpass R1 billion worth of investment, private enterprise investment, as well as some degree of state investment that has been made there. The sorry part, Chairperson, is what we have seen yet. That is that a lot of the infrastructure, some of it has gone to ruins, some of it can still be repaired and still be put into use. Many of the cultivated crops there, particularly vineyards, is underwater. Farmers cannot get into the land. Farmers cannot do any follow-up work. There's a lot of mud over there and things like that. Now, what does this translate to, Chairperson, in terms of the social consequences to the people in that area and the people who are directly affected? Apart from the farmer, Mr. Bosman has mentioned the figure that was given to us yesterday. He said that approximately 3.5 workers work on a hectare of vineyard. And their estimation is that there's approximately 8,000 hectares that's affected. Now you times that by 3 and that gives you the 24,000 that Mr. Bosman has referred to. But I think the cumulative effect is very close to 100,000 people that will be affected. Problem, Chairperson, is that these are ordinary rural people. They are not people who have bank balances, little savings accounts and things like that. The majority of them. I mean, we know the ordinary rural folk. what my appeal, Chairperson, is that some or other way be found to assist these people. Now, food packages, perhaps a small allowance, I don't think that is a total answer. A total answer lies in getting those farms productive again, so that the farmer can continue to employ them. Again, it's a chicken and egg situation. Do we help to resuscitate the farm so that the employees can continue working and thereby earn a living, or do we rather assist the workers in terms of some little handouts? My personal view, Jefferson, is that the sort of solution that we need to find is a sustainable solution, that we don't make people beggars, but we help people to work for their keep. The other problem, Chairperson, that we were encountered with yesterday is that there were a number of developing farmers, small people, and you know, to a developing farmer, if he loses only 20% of what he has or she has, it's a massive dent in those people's station in life. There were a number of them. We had asked for details to be sent through, and of course they are also compiling their own reports at the Provincial Department of Agriculture there, but we had also requested that it be sent through to our committee secretary. The idea, Chairperson, is that those people, many of them are also engaged in livestock, and they have lost quite a bit. And I feel that perhaps the Department of Agriculture should have a task team to look at the plight of those farmers as well, those developing farmers. As far as the commercial farmers are concerned, Jefferson, what one saw downstream where we went, the upper reaches, there are still winds and that sort of thing that seem to be okay. But that's how you see it with the naked eye, you know, up from the air. You don't know what's really happening on the ground. One of the complaints of the farmers was that they cannot get into those lands, they cannot work them, they cannot do what needs to be done in order to get a sustainable crop. In short, Jefferson, I think government will have to seriously look at possibilities of helping to re-establish those farms so that employment is not lost, the employees can carry on working. Some of the problems that the farmers mentioned yesterday was that we don't have an income. How do we pay? We've got overdrafts, we had a flood not so long ago, and before we could sort of raise our heads, we are shot down again with another flood. So these are the sort of problems here. And of course what Mr. Bosman had mentioned, that one needs to look at long-term solutions. Mother Nature, Jefferson, has a terrible way of dealing with us. So you are not going to be able to fight Mother Nature. But what you can do is put systems in place which can assist. Finally, Chairperson, there's apparently a 17-kilometer, what is it called for you? Kierwal. Now, Kierwal, Chairperson, is a sort of a sand-made wall which sort of controls the flow of water that it would not spill over. Now, that has not been kept maintained because there's been constant damage periodically with flood. Perhaps some or other way of encouraging the farmers as well as the state to find a medium whereby these things could be better maintained would help tremendously. And I think, Jefferson, it's an area where the farming is very intensive, and therefore we cannot lose that type of farming activity that has been taking place, and we need to assist. Thank you very much.
Amar Pirasan,
Mr.
San,
thank you. I'm covered by my people.
Mama Sara? Can you speak to the man?
On action taken by the regulated the mission of anyone in the information.
How was that information disseminated to make sure that the rural community gets the information?
I think there were a few questions, Member Minister, the DG. I think one is very clear, Minister, is that the climate change is upon us. Yesterday we were dealing with some cases of drought, fire, some of the farmers almost had their farmers and their farms repossessed by land bank. Was in daily activities they couldn't commit into their repayment agreement to the land bank. Case in point is also being made by Mr. Abram that says, how do you repay overdraft and finances and so on. Question for me really adds so much of our strategic intervention and the agriculture for us in the department on matters related to climate change on a more sustainable basis. But that's the bottom line for me. Because we cannot really deal with these matters on a piecemeal basis. Today is flooding here, tomorrow it's going to be, you know, drought here, and the other day it's going to be third quarter. A case in point here is also being raised about the need, you know, as to how best we really manage this risk. It's a risk factor associated with climate change. And whether you're talking here of insurance is one thing. Or we can talk about other measures, those are the kind of issues that we really need to look into. That's the bottom line for me. Climate change is upon us. And also, the fact that, you know, that summit is coming to our country end of this year. What measures are we going to showcase as a country, especially the sector which we are dealing with here now. In saying to the world out there, of course, meant primarily for ourselves. This is what we are doing in practice. Yes, another one.
Chairperson, you missed my answer earlier.
Oh, I thought
the
first one I covered you.
Sorry.
Okay. So you're quick then.
Thank you. Okay, I have a few observations, Minister, and suggestions. Maybe if you want to comment on it, fine. The question. When I look at this flood story, I speak from experience because I grew up in an area where the catchment area on the rivers ran through the area is one of the highest in South Africa. First Cliff Mountain, those areas up. And the proper management of those dams, on the other side, Mr. Side and this side. The proper management of those dams over the last 50 years, long time ago, has been the key to avoiding floods. And let's face it, it is the highest rain point of Africa, those mountains over there. So this puts me into the question, you were on this trip on the 16th of January, so this flood started a little bit before that, and that put us, in the management of those dams, put us 2 weeks back, which put us right in the middle of the leaf period in December. So when you look at the management of those dams, you have to look at who was on leave, what went wrong, because something went wrong, somebody just slipped up with a day or two or whatever. And it could be disastrous if there's a heavy rainfall in the catchment areas, and the catchment area was big because there was not one river in Mpumalanga that contributed to fall, you know, that contributed to it. It was all over South Africa, everybody, every stream fed into it. And so if a few people went on leave, one guy maybe opened his dam early enough, but the other 10 did not, then it's a problem. So go to the leaf areas, the leaf period, and you will see exactly what went wrong. Now that puts us into the realm of the disaster plan and the semi-permanent task group. And there has to be interdepartmental management structure. Now the finance, he said that This cost is about 15 million, if I'm not correct, an increase on the budget for this post. It's not the end of the world, that money, but it does tell us that we should maybe, into this organogram, build in a branch for disaster management, because this management branch has to look at the planning, has to look at the management with other departments. It's a you just can't get a top team together suddenly when the disaster is already struck. You need somebody who is in constant monitoring of this. Now, what we learned, I think you could look at the area of food security agrarian reform. There's a part of the infrastructure support, and you know, that's mostly for subsistence and smallholder farming. But you could maybe wiggle around that organogram and build in something there. You might need agricultural soil engineering skills there, because you're talking about levees, dams, levees, and that type of thing, flow of rivers, you know, the angle of the river, the how deep is the river, how flat is the area. And that brings us to a point where we say, look, the family farming areas that I've seen all over the country, some you're safe on high ground, but others you're almost in the river, or the area is very flat, it's a floodplain. Now, floodplains and farming floodplains in the rivers is a worldwide phenomenon, we know that. But the good return on those soil is so tempting, you have to do it actually. You know, it's profitable and so forth. Now, when you look at this, we must look at it holistically. We could say, okay, these guys, some of them are taking a chance and they know they would be wiped out, maybe not, or they will have damage and they will have the state will fail them. But we must also look at the other side. We must look at the whole thing. You know, the tax, the various taxes, UIF and all those funds that have been paid in by these entrepreneurs, the farmers, commercial and other, that contributes to the state coffers over years. And sometimes it's time to pay back, you know, to reinvest in these people. Because our people, we have free economy, we bring our own capital, we start our own businesses, our own farms, we want that. We want people to bring their own capital to the table, develop the country, and so the state gets revenue again. The more the people do, the more tax that the government gets, the more work opportunities there are. So we have to have the view, I think, philosophically at least, that we must reinvest, because they've been investing and they've been paying us. Okay? So maybe we should reinvest and look at that point and justify, when we say to the taxpayer, we're going to pay out for these people and reestablish them, then we can justify by saying what they have paid in tax. And it's easy to find it out, to justify it. So we don't have to be scared to say that the ordinary taxpayer in the cities will say, yes, he's just doing something wrong and we never got our money back. But they've been investing. Now, just to close off, I see that the replacement of infrastructure such as buildings is mostly, most of this farm we saw is on high ground. There's little islands and you know, the banks of the river is high and dry.
So can you summarize the
slide?
Can you summarize that?
Yes, So we should look at, we could look at, say, but if you put buildings up or we reestablish you, put it on safe ground, so don't just have to do it again. Then there's other infrastructures like pump structures. If you have to remove it, you could lose it, but there are ways to put it waterproof and encase it into extensive structures in the riverbanks. So they don't have to be removed and don't have to be lost in the future. Then dams, levees, bridges and roads, obviously that's another category of infrastructure which you can't put always on high ground because dams are right in the river. So we have to look at this. I would really think, Minister, if we look at this, we must look at the financial model, look at the justification of paying people because they've paid us and they're going to pay us again in the next 20 years before the next flood. So we must look at the financial way of looking at this. My colleague also mentioned the international system. and then of course build this into your organigram. It's not going to make a big difference to have another few people on this permanently. Maybe you can juggle some of the posts there and build it into it. Thank you.
Okay, that was the one round and the very last round. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll give you the duty to answer the last. The prediction of a La Nina with potential above normal rain was issued by the South African Weather Service in August of 2010, and it was since updated with more confidence. So since August already, the predictions were made and reporting as well as the stuff up. So the conditions that we call our NEMA and our NEMA is happening concurrent within our country because we have a drought whilst we have floods. We have a drought in the Western Cape whilst we have floods in the remainder of the East province. So the tropical weather system that happened in December, which were moving, we knew that the tropical weather systems were moving further south and that they would hit us from really seriously from December, mid-December onwards. And because there was excessive moisture available, more showers and more severe thunderstorms with about normal rain would be prevalent in the country. So the National Disaster Management Group was set up already early in December, and the National Disaster Management Team was operational already in December, at the beginning of December. And if the National Disaster Management Committee was not up and running already by December, the flood situation would have been much worse than it was experienced in our country. We had seen and managed the risk quite extensively, to the extent that what you saw happen when the flood actually happened was nothing compared to what would have happened if we did not manage the dam and the disaster from the beginning of December. So a well-established incident reporting system was developed between the municipalities and the provinces, and because there are acts which allow the National Disaster Management Committee to be put in place, and on the basis of the assessment by the Disaster Management Committee and by the motivation of municipalities and provinces, we made decisions to classify those areas disaster areas or disastrous events. Now, by the time we had the flyover, we had already been working with this matter for the whole of December. We were in fact ready to declare the disaster during the first week of January 18th. But as I'm saying, that because the motivation has to come from municipalities and provinces, and they then have to inform the decision government takes to classify disasters again as either a local, a provincial, or a national disaster. You would have noticed that we immediately declared a national disaster before we even declared a local or provincial disaster. Precisely because by the time we had collated all the information, we were convinced that the process necessitated a national disaster to be called instead of first calling a local, then a provincial, and then a national disaster. So the legal obligation on provinces and municipalities, I think that allows us to assess the magnitude and the severity of the potential and the severity of the disaster effect that could have resulted. This also assisted us in lowering the number of deaths that we experienced, and we were then also able to understand that these weather patterns of La Nina are expected to continue until March 2010. It also assisted us in preparing for the La Nina impact until March 2010. And the chairperson of the fourth, 2011. So, chairperson was correct in saying that this is the impact of climate change, and that a sustainable response to climate change is what has to be developed. And we, in the Interministerial Committee, that's precisely what we're doing as a country. To say how do we mitigate against climate change, and what strategic intervention mechanisms we can plan to, in fact, look at the mitigation against climate change. And definitely, it would also be the build-up towards our hosting of COP17 summit. So, Chairperson, how best we manage the risk further is equally important as to how we have managed the risk before. And therefore, even the release of water from the dam were already being managed during December. And what we saw, the flood that we saw in January, was actually, as you said, correctly said, it was the rate and the level and the speed of the flow of the water, which then necessitated the opening of the dam, the level of the dam as well. So, yes, we have identified the need for support. We have never said that there will be no support. We have always said that we will assist, and a form of assistance will be dealt out once we have assessed the damage and once the water has subsided. What we have said is that we cannot provide compensation. There's a huge difference between compensation and assistance. We will go out of our way to assist. Immediately we have said that we will assist with the rehabilitation of infrastructure. That is not where we will stop. Tomorrow we'll be meeting with the union to evaluate what further assistance we need to give. So tomorrow we'll meet with the union and we'll assess further assistance. Compensation is out of the question. Then, on Thursday, we meet with the provinces, and by now, provinces are beginning to give us a clearer picture of what is happening. In Gauteng, we've been able to quantify where exactly the damage is. We're already able to say which farms they're damaged, what damage has been caused, if it's to broilers, if it is to whatever infrastructure. We are already able to cost the exercise in Gauteng. Northwest is also beginning to give us more accurate information. By Thursday, the provinces will be able to give us much better and clearer information. Even by today or tomorrow, when we meet with the union, we'll also have a clear picture from our side, and we'll be able to verify this against the information which will be provided by the union. All unions, AGFA, NAFU, TAO, COSATU, and FAU have been invited. This infrastructure intervention will help us to re-establish farmers. Of course, we cannot, as I'm saying, our intervention is not going to be compensation, so we cannot with overdraft or that type of financial difficulties are experienced by farmers. It is difficult for us to say that there will be compensation without. We need to compensate owners of houses who lost their houses. It's difficult to have a form of insurance now. That would be a long-term future. We are also doing as a long-term intervention, immediate and long-term. Government is evaluating work with parties of public work, the irrigation infrastructure of our country. So as a medium-term to long-term intervention, our irrigation infrastructure has been upgraded and renovated. In particular, we see the Fala irrigation scheme, as well as other irrigation schemes. We are also looking at the situation of dams, be it on-farm dams or larger dams, the Department of Water Affairs, Public Works, Agriculture, and COPSA, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, are looking at the long-term implications of water management in our country. The social consequences to the area, again, there's immediate, short-term, and long-term intervention. The immediate intervention looks at humanitarian assistance. You would have seen social services also going out last night. Yesterday, over the weekend, they have had meetings with the private sector, and the private sector has also come on board with assistance. The humanitarian assistance has been managed by social services. They will also look at the implications for education. The Department of Health is then also working on the implications for waterborne diseases like malaria, and they are also then working with municipalities to provide chlorine for water for human consumption. On our side, we are managing very closely the outbreaks of disease among animals and on farm. We have had one reported case of Rift Valley fever in the Western Cape, which we are monitoring very closely. Likewise, we will be monitoring very closely the potential outbreak of other diseases such as foot and mouth disease. We are doing further monitoring the release of the water with Water Affairs. The National Disaster Management Committee is managing that process. And I think that there was a program on TV which was quite mischievous. The program of Christening created quite a pandemonium when it said that the minister will give no support. I think on the new channels and old channels we have categorically stated that we will give support, we will assist farmers, especially firstly with infrastructure. What farmers are fighting for is compensation. They on the radio program they are in fact expecting compensation. We have gone into the notion of compensation. Since 1994, this government has never given compensation for any disaster relief. But again, as in other disasters like floods, fires, and drought, there will definitely be assistance. The form of assistance and the extent of assistance will be worked out. So the model of assistance will be finalized this week. By the end of the week, once we have made to the provinces, as I said, the type of package, the holistic package which we will be giving, will be taking a more realistic framework. So by the end of the week, we will be able to give you a capture of what the full package of assistance will be. What we'll also do is when
importance of public works has lifted the arms, the SSNDF, to build assist with immediate bridges and roads which have been damaged. And in this regard, we'll also be first priority to the farm workers who have lost their jobs. We'll use them as the first stage of workers who will be employed when the new university is finished. Thank you, Chairperson. If there's anything I've missed out on, I'll also ask the DG to help. But we certainly will assist to be established tomorrow.
I think that would be it. It is work in progress, I must say, especially as it relates to the whole matter of climate change. It would be very important that we get a clearer view from the department of what work is there in that direction. Members, we should be aware now that there is a climate change green paper out. At some point, we will have to set up as part of our own program for a briefing in this regard. Because, again, agriculture, for the future, you know, gets very relevant in that entirety of discussion. I think if there is no other question, we shall have to break only for 15 minutes and then come back as we had agreed earlier on. We shall only be meeting on all of ourselves without the media presence. Thank you. Time now is almost 5 minutes after 12. Can you be back here by 12:15? Thank you.